The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to another UAB Director's Chair. He is the athletic director for your UAB Blazers, Mark Ingham, on the left-hand side of the screen here on our YouTube channel. Of course, wherever you get your favorite podcasts, we're available on every major indice out there. And more importantly, listen to the show live at least five times a week on the TKR app. So we're everywhere you can find us. Marcus, what's going on, brother? How are you? Happy college football bowl season.
Yeah, no kidding. Wish we were in it, right? It's a great time, and I love the bowl season. I think that, it's just an opportunity for the players to travel somewhere and play a unique team that they haven't played before, which is always fun. So, yeah, it's exciting.
One of the fun things for a college football fan is to see those matchups, man. Those matchups are just because those are matchups you just don't normally see. And it's going to be fantastic. Of course, we got Georgia-FSU. That matchup, Georgia favored by 14. You've got, of course, the Birmingham Bowl with the congratulations to Troy and Duke. And so it's just a wonderful games and a great time of the year. And college football pretty much every single day of the week. Let's talk about the CFP a little bit here before we get into the NCAA and what they're proposing for schools. Your thoughts on FSU, of course, not getting there had to be some type of unprecedented situation because, you know, an SEC champion's always gotten in. We know an undefeated Power Five team's always gotten in. So someone was going to be left out. But what were your thoughts as an athletic director?
Well, I suppose, like a lot of people, I was surprised that Florida State didn't get in. And I want to be careful not to overly criticize people that are on that committee, because I've got friends on that committee that, and I did this, I think I mentioned in maybe our last podcast, I was asked to do a mock selection, which they do every summer for people that they think maybe at some point could be on the committee. And it's extensive. I mean, it's not like they just cast a little vote. One of the questions I guess I would ask is that I read somewhere one of the committee members said, when it came down to it, did we think that Florida State could win the national title without their quarterback? Mm-hmm. And they didn't. And now you're predicting the future, which Florida State's AD appropriately said. Okay, so now you're in the, you know, prognosticating business. Is that your job? You know, and so he's saying the right thing. And I also agree with his question. It's a good one. But I guess the question that I have is that being asked every year? Is that what they do every year? And maybe it is. That when it comes down to those last four, are they really, is that what's always being asked? Which of these teams could win the whole thing compared to, and there's a subtle difference, which of these teams has had the best record or played the best so far?
Yeah.
We
don't know this, and I'd love to find out, but if Jordan Travis wasn't injured, would have FSU gotten in? That would have been chaos right there. If in fact, and again, you know, winning 16-6 and just getting by Florida, a 5-6 squad the week before, and then you brought this to the attention that Florida actually beat Tennessee earlier in the season, to look as lackluster. As a college football fan, I'm happy. I'm glad Iowa lost three games this year, because I don't want to see an Iowa, you know, a team that's got over unders in the 20s playing in the college football playoffs. So I think as a college football fan, if I didn't have a dog in the hunt, I'm happy the four teams we got. And quite frankly, and listen, you can say what you want, Vegas is part of this. The fact that Georgia, a team that won 29 games in a row, 48 of their last 49, defending champions the last 2 years, loses one game to Alabama, and they're not even sniffing the final four, to me is more of a travesty than Florida not getting in.
Yeah, and Florida State was ranked fourth right up until the end when they got leaped by Alabama. And so, you know, again, that's all it's, you got to pick somebody, right? And agree or disagree. I was as mad. I was as surprised and disappointed that SMU didn't get into the New Year's Six. Mm-hmm. I thought when you look at Liberty's schedule, I mean, I watched Liberty barely beat Sam Houston, who was not good.
Yeah.
And it was at Liberty. And, you know, when you look at the schedule that Liberty is now playing in the new Conference USA, to get them into the New Year's Six is laughable, in my opinion. And it's just confusing. SMU lost to Oklahoma, for goodness sakes, and TCU. And TCU, I guess you could say, is a bad loss. You know, it's a Big 12 team. They played them close, crosstown rivalry type game. But they beat the stew out of everybody else that they played. And then they went on the road and beat Tulane, at Tulane in their conference championship, but they too, their quarterback broke his leg or something. Yeah. I shouldn't say that. I don't know. Had a leg injury. I think it's a bad leg injury. Mm-hmm. The last game of the season before the championship, and they still went and won on the road at Tulane, which is a good team that we played. And so it's just odd. I mean, that's a better matchup. SMU Oregon, that's a better game than Liberty Oregon.
I would totally agree with you. Explain the James Madison situation too. They were not up for a bowl game because obviously they made that move from the subdivision to Division One, but because there weren't enough teams, they end up getting a bowl game. How'd that work?
Yeah, so you know when you elevate from 1AA, what we used to call 1AA FCS, up to Division One, you accept that as part of the transition. I don't want to call it penalty, but it's part of the mathematical way that you're trying to protect and include everybody that's been in it. Like you say, the FBS as it exists because of the power and the strength of the membership. Mm-hmm. And so you're adding this member, and it's just part of the transition process. And James Madison knew that when they were moving up and accepted that. And then they went and had this incredible year, which made it seem like, oh, wow, what a travesty that they're not getting in, which I also appreciate that view. But because there weren't enough 6-6 teams, that's what opens it up to people like Madison to get in. And so good for them. I'm glad that they're going to have the opportunity. But it's that's the why.
Yeah. He's the athletic director for the UAB Blazers, UABsports.com, for all your ticket needs. And of course, a basketball well in hand here. And we got the bowl season kicking off as well. Go check out UABsports.com. He joins us every week here on the TKR app and wherever you get your favorite podcast here on our YouTube channel. This is why I bring you on the show, because this whole Charlie Baker situation, I can just imagine. I don't know if you're ripping your eyeballs out of your head. Charlie Baker, of course, the NCAA proposing rule changes that would include all D1 schools paying athletes, setting aside a minimum of $30,000 per athlete that would go for basically half of their athletes. And it also includes Title IX, so that goes for women as well. Gee, it sounds like, what's $30,000 per athlete? What's the big deal, right? And I guess you're allowing schools to vote on this. So some schools can say, yes, we want to do this. Some schools say we can't afford to do this, so we're not going to be able to do this. Where does that put the UAB Blazers?
Well, fortunately, right now, it's just a really ignorant proposal, not a done deal.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard presidents say words like tone deaf and foolish, ridiculous, disgusting. It just shows a complete lack of understanding of how any of us operate. It's shocking to me that this very intelligent person who got his job because of his political prowess, which we need at this point, has been on the job for about a year and would put something out. And they have these Division I council meetings for a reason. And people on the council are saying, we didn't know anything about this. Where did this come from? $30,000? Okay, well, why 30,000? Why not 20? Why not 50? Where did 30,000 come from? Why is that the number? So that you know, if this went forward and if we tried to do it, this would cost us $6.5 million a year.
Yeah.
So where's that coming from? And mm-hmm. There's this lack of understanding that there's just all this money. And even the top 1%, and I'm saying the financial top 1%, they still spend all their money. So that means they're going to have to figure out what are they currently doing that they're going to take away and carve off $6.5 million. Or if they have a bigger athletic department like Ohio State, they've got three times the number of athletes as us. So for them, for my $6.5 million, that'd be like $18 million for them, you know? And so where's that coming from?
Do you like the idea though? And this has been the elephant in the room, right? These collectives. I mean, we know what's going on here. Players getting paid to play. It's not all NIL situation for name likeness. You brought this up last week. You know, some guy says, listen, they're going to give me 50. Well, we'll give you 60. Well, we'll give you 70. And so we know what's going on here, but the fact that you actually can control it a little bit as a university, because you are the one that is adopting this particular rule proposal. Does that make you feel like you've got more control? What happens to those collectives? Do those go away? And I mean, The toothpaste has already come out of the tube. We're trying to stuff it back in. So, I mean, so it is what it is. I understand what he's doing. I don't know where that $30,000 came from. And when I saw that number, I was like, $30,000 a player is crazy for a UAB or anyone in a group of five or even in a power five for some power five schools, knowing that only 11 or 12 teams actually made any money last year, period. But I mean, does it make you feel like you have a little bit more control? And where do you think it goes from here?
I guess it would give us more control. I'm not trying to have control of it, but there does need to be transparency. There's too many players going places and not getting the money that they were promised because the money doesn't exist the way that their school promotes it. You know, like we got a coach in our league who's telling our coach, oh, our collective's $2.5 million. No, it's not. That's your goal. Your goal is to raise $2.5 million, but you don't have $2.5 million. So now our coach is in a panic. Oh my gosh, we've got to have that money. Well, it's not accurate. Now, look, they may have half that, which is still a lot of money, but it would be nice to know accurately what is it. And so when a coach from that institution tells a player, hey, we're going to pay you $800,000. Do they even have $800,000? I mean, where's that coming from? So what's going on is these kids are getting promised money. Now there's street agents that have gotten involved as the middleman. So the street agent calls you, Tony, and because they have no affiliation, and they say, hey, Tony, based on your stats, we think you're worth $1 million in the transfer portal. Oh, yeah, where would I go? Well, I got a few places, but you got to get in the portal. And then all I want is 10%. I'm going to take 10%. Oh, and then they get the kid to sign a contract that gives them a percentage of their first year earnings in the NFL. Like, it's a ton of money. Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, when you have regulations around like credit cards and check cashing businesses and our other sports agents, there's regulations around what those fees can be and what those charges are, like the real estate business. There's no regulation around this.
Yeah.
And these kids are taking these horrible deals and the street agents are getting paid a ton of money. And the kid finds himself in a deal. He goes to the NFL and now they're having to pay this gross amount of money back to the street agent, which is not nearly worth what it, you know, what they're claiming to be worth.
So as an athletic director, where does this go from here? What are you hearing?
Well, what I'm hearing is there's got to be some very quick discussion with Charlie Baker to rein him back in. And then there's some ADs out there that are frankly a problem. You know, they're at the top 1%, and funny enough, maybe have announced their retirement or they're within a year of retirement. And so they're kind of enjoying being I'm the student athlete advocate. Yeah. Well, you're leaving next June, dude. You're not going to have to ever deal with this, you know, and they're kind of throwing their hands up in the air and just caution the wind. But I'm throwing the towel in. I don't want to deal with it anymore. But I'm telling you, man, there are some of the schools that would shock you that are at the top of the most elite football conference, top financially and performance wise. And they don't have any money. I mean, they might have $200 million, but they spend $200 million. So for them to all of a sudden have to do this, they're going to have to take that $6 million, $8 million, $10 million, whatever that number is, away from something else that they're doing. Yeah. So where's that coming from?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you know, I told you, baseball coach, that you could have that other assistant. You can't. I'm going to take that away from you. And I told you, track, you could have that other assistant. You can't. Hey, I know we've been feeding those kids all that extra food. We're going to have to cut that budget so we can just give it straight to the kid. I mean, the notion that you just have this other money you just get it from the university. The university makes a bunch of money. They, too, allocate their money. You think that all these universities are just stockpiling cash? I mean, yes, they have the good sense to create reserve accounts, but if they have money, they use their resources to try to advance the institution with faculty and facilities and equipment and all that stuff and infrastructure. They're not just stockpiling cash that they don't know what to do with it. So it's just it's a lack of understanding. And to create a new subdivision, look, man, the bottom half of the SEC can't do this.
Yeah.
And a lot of the top half of the SEC can't do this. And probably most of the Big 12 can't do this. And at least half to two thirds of the ACC can't even consider doing this. And so the bottom half of the Big 10, I mean, it's not like when people go, well, the P4, what's now the P4, they can do it. No, they can't. No, they cannot. They can't. And so it's, again, tone deaf is what I would call it.
There you go. You brought this up last week. He's Mark Ingram, the UAB athletic director. This is called the UAB director's chair, about the transfer portal. And it was interesting, too, because this past Monday, of course, the door just opened up. And I think some 587 players, I think it was unprecedented that many players went. And you brought up, what was it, several years ago, 2 years ago, it was 7%. Now it's over 20%. One in five players in college football or in college athletics are now on the transfer portal. There's now over 1,100 players in the transfer portal, which is crazy. I thought it was interesting. There's only two schools that didn't lose anybody, and that was Michigan and Northwestern. Michigan obviously playing for a national championship, and Northwestern's a pretty doggone good education. So a lot of parents are probably saying, you're not leaving Northwestern. You got yourself a ride. South Carolina lost 15 players to the transfer portal on Monday. Just wanted to get your thoughts on that because you brought it up last week. I thought it was really interesting.
Well, I heard Ohio State had 15 as well, and I don't know if that's accurate or not.
Including their quarterback, yeah.
Yeah, that's a number I was given. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's accurate, but it's just a way people think now. I'm not saying that if you're a transfer, you're a bad person or anything like that. There's a lot of good reasons to transfer, and it works out for a lot of people, but it actually doesn't work out for most people. And so you can identify stories where it works out, but you could find 20 for every one that for every Joe Burrow out there, there's 20 to 50 people you've never heard of because it didn't work out for them.
Yeah.
And it's a shame. What I said last week is that in 2020, 6.5% of our football rosters were transfers. Now it's almost 21% of our football rosters are transfers.
It's absolutely crazy. It really is crazy. All right. We usually talk about some classic rock, but I wanted to get into something else because you and I are kind of in our 50s. But I want to ask you about Norman Lear. I've been hearing so much about Norman Lear and his TV shows in the 70s. And I know you grew up watching All in the Family and Good Times and the Jeffersons and Maude and One Day at a Time. And I just wanted to get your thoughts. People now, you can watch like All in the Family and syndication. I don't know how it does. It's not like the Andy Griffith Show or the Brady Bunch where the numbers go through the roof. And I know it makes people scratch their heads and makes them a little uncomfortable because Norman Lear attacked abortion. He attacked bigotry. He attacked racism. He attacked the wars. He attacked everything in his comedy shows and made light of those things. But I just want to get your thoughts on Norman Lear and some of those great TV shows, because there was a point in time where 60% of Americans were watching a Norman Lear show.
Yeah. And, you know, I think this could be said for a lot of topics is we all have to learn and grow through our life. And there were topics, words used, language, phrases, things that today would be in some fashion culturally or gender related or discriminatory, would be, you know, insensitive from a race, age, what, you know, gender discrimination sort of subject. Those were things that back then people did not identify as insensitive. You know, touchy, sure. In your face, sure. But now, you know, you get canceled over. So you can't go back and go, oh, you know, those people were all hateful because 50 years ago, literally 50 years ago, they said or did a thing. Hey, we've learned and grown from that. We don't do that anymore. That doesn't mean that, you know, for at the time it was acceptable. It's not acceptable now. I grew up watching All in the Family and shows like that, and were Good Times, and man, they were awesome shows. I'd watch them again. I'm not sure I'm gonna sit down and do a marathon over the weekend and watch all of them, but yeah, I'd watch them again.
I actually remember watching Welcome Back, Kotter, and Happy Days. They were on back to back, and then I think the Love Boat came on. It was a Saturday night, and then the Carol Burnett
That's
show.
A good night, man.
It was 6 hours. We only had three channels: ABC, CBS, and NBC. We had no Fox. We didn't have any Alabama Public Television, or in my particular case, Ohio Public Television. There was plenty to watch, my friend. Saturday nights.
The Hazard was in there.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
Thrown in there.
No, it was Love American Style. I love that. It was fantastic. Hey, thank you, brother. Appreciate you, man. We look forward to catching up with you next week. Happy holidays. Continue here, and this is the UAB Director's Chair. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.